Mr. Masters, reel 14.
I wonder if, when we're just talking, when we stopped first of all there, about how in the first days you didn't have lockers, you didn't have proper...
No, the kit bags were in racks in various accommodation, either on the mess decks or adjacent compartments, in which everything had to be stored.
And during the daytime, the table went up to the bulkhead, to the deckhead?
Not necessarily.
No?
Not necessary, no. There was no other use for the mess deck except for living in. And the tables were slung. By slinging, I mean they had what was known as a crawfoot. And this was suspended from two eyes in the deckhead through a bracket, the lower part of which, was built over, carried the table, which usually hooked onto two bolts in the ship's side.
Yes.
You see, that type of table was, well, right through the service almost, in various forms.
And that gave you clear space on the...
Oh, yes, you had plenty of room to do all that was required.
Yeah. And you also, I think we said before, headroom was adequate always. You could always stretch out.
Yes.
During the day, when as soon as you were out of bed in the morning, out of the hammock, it was put away.
Yes.
Usually outside, elsewhere.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, everything was stowed away.
Yeah. And heating and ventilating, ventilation...
Ventilation was quite adequate. And it was in the early days by natural means, and as time wore on, so they introduced various methods of supplying exhaust fans. Sizes depended on requirements of the size of accommodation compartments, and then of course with the gradual introduction of anti-gas methods, the ventilation became a very important item. And it was necessary to know the cubic capacity of every compartment, what was the ability of the fan to exhaust and resupply. In other words, the whole thing had to be worked out to a very fine art.
And things like heating in cold weather, you had steam pipe.
Well,
heating,
in the various classes of ship, they had steam heating through. And, of course, with the later ships, that was overtaken by electric heating.
And also, if you were in very hot weather in the tropics, what was the situation then in the mess deck? Could it be very, very hot if you were in...
Well, it could, but if you wanted any extra thing in the way of gut, you could always rig what we used to call a windsail, a wind sail, which was a chute, which could be hoisted, you see, to mouth face in the direction you was going, or whichever direction was adequate to engage any cool air which might be about. In other words, to circulate it.
Yep. And apart from these sort of basic things, what about washing and toilet facilities for the men?
Well, they were always adequate. Each type of person, from... Well, WOs, of course, always had cabins, but chiefs had their own messes, their own bathrooms, and they also had their own toilets, and petty officers the same, and so according to class of ships, so the arrangements were made, even to battleships, I mean, where there were all quite a huge accommodation for everything you required in the way of personal hygiene.
And going on to the social life in these mess decks. I mean, it was a very close-quartered existence, wasn't it?
Well,
I mean,
of course.
You lived close to people.
Of course you did, you see, because in those days, you left England, if you was going on a foreign station, you could possibly be away from England 3 years, or you'd be on a foreign station 2.5 years, with time to get there and time to come back, would be there other 6 months of the 3 years, you see. If you was in home waters, of course, that was slightly different in that wherever you touched, you'd be in touch with your own base, if necessary. I mean, you could land a man, say, at Scapa and send him down by train to Chatham, or fill up as you go, it would be possible then that the time of living together would be possibly less than 2 or 3 years. But on the other end, of course, the normal person went to a ship and you could be in it for 4 years. And during that time, of course, you lived in close proximity with such a large number of men. There was always a floating population. Some were going, some were coming. If you was abroad, of course, that wouldn't be as blatant, because there wouldn't be changes except by illness, death, or accident, or something of that nature. Or if a man had reached the end of his time, and he would be possibly sent home from China if a ship was coming home, but it would be passage by ship only. And the whole thing was, you've got to know everybody's idiosyncrasies as you went, and you knew all about everybody, and everybody knew all about you, so that there was no back door about it. In other words, you mentioned a man's name years afterwards to somebody who you was with and say, remember something? Or vice versa, you see. And as I say, it was by and large, it was a very enjoyable life. You saw quite a lot. You had very wide experience of men, places, ships.
Could this sort of situation, apart from these advantages like that, could it cause a certain amount of tensions, people living so close on top of each other,
well,
for such long periods of...
There was always that possibility. I mean, somebody getting a bit excited over nothing or something of that nature, or you'd get somebody possibly... very rare cases of their brain going. You know, I mean, you get people adapt all sorts of funny ways. I can give you a case in point. We were going, when I was in Chatham, we were going from Bombay back to Mombasa. It took 14 days. We'd been 7 days at sea, and a man came up to me and he said, I'm fighting Tommy Burns Tuesday. I said, good for you. Where? He said, Blackfriars. And he meant it. But of course the heat had got him, you see, and it wasn't uncommon in the tropics. Mm-hmm. Well, it still happens. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they kept him under close observation until they got to Mombasa, and there was a ship there who had come up from the Cape. She carried a doctor, and she was going back to the Cape, so back went Isaac to the Cape, you see. But as I say, that's only one case of many. Mm-hmm. Even the tome, you come across people with a sudden shock, be it a death in the family or possibly an accident aboard, or somebody suddenly lose their reason.
What, apart from that could happen through lots of things, of course, as you say,
anything
at all. I mean, even a letter from home, maybe. But when you're living, I say, day to day in the same close proximity is the word you use, to other people, could you actually get a certain amount of withdrawal, men who actually just opt out of the thing and just do their work, go through their own life?
Oh, yes.
Separate,
yes,
from
yes, you. Yes, yes, oh, yes, yes, yes. You had men develop all sorts of odd ideas. Well, I mean, that's human in any case. Mm. And, I mean, there was nothing, we'll say, extraordinary about it, because if a man had suddenly developed any trait like that, well, everybody knew. And it was obvious to everybody what the reason was. Mm-hmm. And therefore everybody gave them sympathy. Mm-hmm. Of course, you would come across a type of woman to have sympathy, but anyway, then they had to paddle their own canoe, and that was that.
And could you get fights occasionally from similar sort of problems?
Very seldom.
Seldom?
Very seldom. Now, as I say, I've been in the ships with 800-900 men, and a fight was just out of the question, except, of course, if you'd suddenly gone back, we'll say, to a place like Malta, and a crowd had gone ashore overnight and got full up, and come back, and, well, it was more or less, what shall I say, a relief from tension, more than bad feeling, because invariably they check out the next morning, oh, well, because you'll have a pint now.
You could get these tensions, which drinking...
Oh, yes. Yes, yes,
yeah. But on board ship, I mean, there wasn't drinking apart from the daily rum issue. So it meant that they had to be contained Does this make people edgy a little bit?
No, I don't think so. By and large, I should say no.
No.
Because, you see, you're all people of an age. You see, it wasn't a case of old and young. Mm. You were all within an area of, say, 10 or 15 years, from the oldest to the youngest. Mm-hmm. You see, because, after all, the length of service then was 22 years. Well, the youngster wouldn't get onto a mastek like that until he was 18. You see, and even the oldest, only coming up to 40, because they were always... usually arrangements made for them to be home within the last 12 months of service. You see, so 20 years would cover the whole lot.
Mm. And in this sort of context, you felt that homosexuality wasn't particularly significant?
No.
It was isolated if it occurred?
Well, you did hear of the odd case here and there, but I mean, it was always, what should I say, so, well, it was always a court-martial case, you see. Mm. And a court-martial was an event, because the Union Jack would be hoisted on the ship holding the court-martial. The gun would be fired when the colours were hoisted in the morning. So that everybody in the fleet, who's that? Oh, court-martial so-and-so. Well, in the majority of cases, you didn't bother, you didn't know what the case was about. But it would be promulgated afterwards, you see, because punishment of the court-martial or... a very serious offence was by warrant. And this warrant was, it was just like an ordinary legal document. If you'd been in a ship where they were very common, you knew the wording so much that you could fill in all the details except the name of the person, the offence and the punishment, see? I mean, you knew it.
And men, as far as you were concerned, there was no particular... incidents of homosexuality
that didn't
happen at all.
No.
What about the other half of the problem, men going ashore in Malta or Gibraltar or wherever and getting venereal disease? Were they separated from the others in the mess?
Oh, definitely.
How was that arranged?
Well, the whole point was, you see, periodically any mess could be sent to the sick bay for a medical inspection. But it was the onus of every man. That was the point. If a man was found to be concealing disease, it was as serious as having committed many offences. You see, because a man was expected, there was the treatment there if it was required. And if a man concealed disease, it was a very hard case for him. Because the punishments were such that it would mean deprivation of badges or deprivation of leave. Well, there was a thousand and one ways they could do it. But usually it was held up to the man's own integrity. And I mean, if a man's worth calling a man at all, well, he just doesn't do that.
And the Navy didn't frown upon it if you admitted it?
No.
Rather you brought it out in
the It was just, not a way of life, but I mean, it was just one of those things that you've got to accept amongst a purely male population.
Mm, sure. And in the event of you being found suffering, you would be treated outside the mess, and you would live in the...
You go to the sick bay.
Sick bay.
You see, and it depended upon the nature of the disease. So, they would be segregated into a special mess. And they had their own mess traps, their own everything. And of course, in the modern method of... Well, I say modern, it was in vogue. Over 50 years now, this general messing. Mm-hmm. The food supplied from the galley is the same for everybody, so that all they had to do was say there were three out of the ship's company of 800. That would be as many as ever you would see, but that was so rare that it just didn't happen. You see, as I say, the possibilities were there, but if in the event of it happening, that's what would have happened.
Yeah. And then otherwise, unless it was very severe, the man would continue working.
Oh, he'd continue his work. Oh, yes, yes, oh, yes. They didn't dodge anything by doing that. You know. The only thing was, you see, they were restricted as regards their movements. They weren't allowed leave or anything of that while they were under doctor's orders. And their whole life was ruled by the regulations laid down by the sick bay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just going on to another topic and... quarter deck, well, close quarter life. off-duty, I mean, the things that you did when you weren't actually working, the off-duty activities could be reading.
You do what you wanted.
Do what you wanted.
You were free to do what you wanted.
Mm. How much gambling was there, in fact?
Very little.
Very little?
It was frowned on, yeah. Definitely. As regards ships, it was discouraged from the word go. And, of course, there were games. I mean, you could sit down and have ordinary hand of cards, mahjong or anything of that nature. Thousands of games, because, I mean, you travel the world and you see all these sort of things happen all over the world. And you could carry on what we'll call a normal life and have a big... quite happy. I mean, some people have been making mats, and some people, I was even best mates with a bluff old mariner who used to do knitting. And he had a standing contract with a West End firm, and they would send him the wool, and he'd knit the finest articles you ever saw. Babies layouts, shawls, pram covers, anything they wanted. And he was a bluff, discontented old rat. I mean, people used to look at him and say, "Good blimey, don't go and talk to him." And he would sit in such a way that, we'll say the general body of the mess was there, he'd come up here and turn his chair around back to them, saying, "There's no good in speaking to him, he wouldn't answer you." And you see the work he turned out. It was really marvellous how the devil he did it. I've often wondered. And of course, he had a name that... didn't imply anything to do with knitting, but Rose, his name was. And